his things the next morning. Thus he submits for the second time to advice that comes from elsewhere. The first time to the advice of the old woman, to a subjective power, an archetypal figure. The second time to a collective pattern. With this step, Henry has passed a milestone on the road to maturity. As an anticipation of the inner development that Henry could hope to achieve through analysis, this dream was extraordinarily promising. The conflicting opposites that kept Henry's soul in tension were impressively symbolized. On the one hand, there was his conscious urge to ascend, and on the other, his tendency to passive contemplation. Also, the image of the pathetic young woman in her white robes, representing Henry's sensitive and romantic feelings, contrasts with the bloated corpses in blue suits, representing his sterile intellectual world. However, to overcome these obstacles and bring about a balance between them would be possible for Henry only after the most severe trials. Fear of the unconscious. The problems we encountered in Henry's initial dream showed up in many others. Problems like vacillation between masculine activity and feminine passivity, or a tendency to hide behind intellectual asceticism. He feared the world, yet was attracted to it. Fundamentally, he feared the obligations of marriage, which demanded that he form a responsible relationship with a woman. Such an ambivalence is not unusual for someone on the threshold of manhood. Though in terms of age Henry had left that phase behind him, his inner maturity did not match his years. This problem is often met in the introvert, with his fear of reality and outer life. The fourth dream that Henry recounted provided a striking illustration of his psychological state. It seems to me that I have had this dream endless times. Military service, long-distance race. Alone I go on my way. I never reach the goal. Will I be the last? The course is well known to me, all of it déjà vu. The start is in a little wood, and the ground is covered with dry leaves. The terrain slopes gently to an idyllic little brook that invites one to tarry. Later, there is a dusty country road. It leads toward Hombrechtikon, a small village near the upper lake of Zurich. A brook bordered by willows, similar to a painting of Birkeland's in which a dreamy female figure follows the course of the water. Night falls. In a village, I ask for directions to the road. I am told the road leads on for 7 hours over a pass. I gather myself together and go on. However, this time the end of the dream differs. After the willow-bordered brook, I get into a wood. There I discover a doe that runs away. I am proud of this observation. The doe has appeared on the left side, and now I turn to the right. Here I see three strange creatures, half pig, half dog, with the legs of a kangaroo. The faces are quite undifferentiated, with large drooping dog ears. Maybe they are costumed people. As a boy, I once masqueraded in the circus costume of a donkey. The beginning of the dream is conspicuously like Henry's initial dream. A dreamlike female figure again appears, and the setting of the dream is associated with another painting by Birkeland. This painting, called Autumn Thoughts, and the dry leaves mentioned earlier in the dream, underline the autumnal mood. A romantic atmosphere also reappears in this dream. Apparently, this inner landscape, representing Henry's melancholy, is very familiar to him. Again, he is in a collective of people, but this time with military comrades on a long-distance race. This whole situation, as the military service also suggests, might be regarded as a representation of an average man's fate. Henry himself said, "It's a symbol of life." But the dreamer does not want to adjust to it. He goes on alone, which was probably always the case with Henry. That is why he has the impression that everything is déjà vu. His thought, "I never reach the goal," indicates strong feelings of inferiority and a belief that he cannot win the long-distance race. His way leads to Hombrechtikon, a name that reminds him of his secret plans to break away from home. Home equals home. Brechen equals to break. But because this breaking away does not occur, he again, as in the initial dream, loses his sense of orientation and must ask for directions. Dreams compensate more or less explicitly for the dreamer's conscious attitude of mind. The romantic, maidenly figure of Henry's conscious ideal is balanced by the appearance of the strange, female-like animals. Henry's world of instincts is symbolized by something feminine. The wood is a symbol of an unconscious area, a dark place where animals live. At first, a doe, a symbol of shy, fugitive, innocent womanliness, emerges, but only for a moment. Then, Henry sees three mixed-up animals of a strange and repulsive appearance. They seem to represent undifferentiated instinctuality, a sort of confused mass of his instincts, containing the raw material for a later development. Their most striking characteristic is that they are all virtually faceless, and thus without the slightest glimmerings of consciousness. In the minds of many people, the pig is closely associated to dirty sexuality. Circe, for example, changed the men who desired her into swine. The dog may stand for loyalty, but also for promiscuity, because it shows no discrimination in its choice of partners. The kangaroo, however, is often a symbol for motherliness and tender carrying capacity. All these animals present only rudimentary traits, and even these are senselessly contaminated. In alchemy, the prime material was often represented by such monstrous and fabulous creatures, mixed forms of animals. In psychological terms, they would probably symbolize the original total unconsciousness, out of which the individual ego can rise and begin to develop toward maturity. Henry's fear of the monsters becomes evident by his attempt to make them seem harmless. He wants to convince himself that they are only dressed-up people, like himself in a boyhood masquerade. His anxiety is natural. A man discovering such inhuman monsters in his inner self as symbols of certain traits of his unconscious has every reason to be afraid. Another dream also shows Henry's fear of the depths of the unconscious. I am a cabin boy in a sailing boat. Paradoxically, the sails are spread, though there is a complete calm. My task consists of holding a rope that serves to fasten a mast. Strangely enough, the railing is a wall covered with stone slabs. This whole structure lies exactly on the border between the water and the sailing boat that floats there alone. I hold fast to the rope, not to the mast, and I am forbidden to look into the water. In this dream, Henry is in a psychological borderline situation. The railing is a wall that protects him, but at the same time obstructs his view. He is forbidden to look into the water, where he might discover unknown powers. All these images reveal his doubt and fear. The man who fears the communications of his inner depths, like Henry, is as much afraid of the feminine element in himself as he is of real women. At one moment he is fascinated by her, at another he tries to escape. Fascinated and terrified, he flees so as not to become her prey. He does not dare to approach a beloved and therefore idealized partner with his animal-like sexuality. As a typical result of his mother tie, Henry had difficulty in giving both feeling and sensuality to the same woman. Again and again, his dreams brought proof of his desire to free himself from this dilemma. In one dream, he was a monk on a secret mission. In another, his instincts tempted him into a brothel. Together with a military comrade who has had many erotic adventures, I find myself waiting in front of a house on a dark street in an unknown city. Entrance is permitted only to women. Therefore, in the hall, my friend puts on a little carnival mask of a woman's face and goes up the stairs. Possibly I did the same as he, but I do not remember clearly. What this dream proposes would satisfy Henry's curiosity, but only at the price of a fraud. As a man, he lacks the courage to enter the house, which is obviously a brothel. But if he divests himself of his masculinity, he might gain an insight into this forbidden world, forbidden by his conscious mind. The dream, however, does not tell us whether he decides to enter. Henry had not yet overcome his inhibitions, an understandable failure if we consider the implications of going into the brothel. The above dream seemed to me to reveal a homoerotic strain in Henry. He appeared to feel that a feminine mask would make him attractive to men. This hypothesis was supported by the following dream. I find myself back in my fifth or sixth year. My playmate of those days tells me how he participated in an obscene act with the director of a factory. My friend laid his right hand on the man's penis to keep it warm and at the same time to warm his own hand. The director was an intimate friend of my father's, whom I venerated for his broad and varied interests, but he was laughed at by us as an eternal youth. For children of that age, homoerotic play is not unusual. That Henry still came to it in his dream suggests that it was loaded with guilt feelings and therefore strongly repressed. Such feelings were linked to his deep fear about forming a lasting tie with a woman. Another dream and its associations illustrated this conflict. I take part in the wedding of an unknown couple. At 1 in the morning, the little wedding party returns from the festivities, the bridal couple, the best man, and the maid of honor. They enter a large courtyard where I await them. It seems that the newlyweds have already had a quarrel, as well as the other couple. They finally find the solution by having the 2 men and the 2 women retire separately. Henry explained, "You see here the war of the sexes, as Giraudoux describes it." And then he added, "The palace in Bavaria, where I remember seeing this dream courtyard, has until lately been disfigured by emergency housing for poor people. When I visited there, I asked myself if it would not be preferable to eke out a poor existence in the ruins of classic beauty than to lead an active life surrounded by the ugliness of a great city. I also asked myself when I was a witness at the wedding of a comrade whether his marriage would last, for his bride made an unfavorable impression on me." The longing to withdraw into passivity and introversion, the fear of an unsuccessful marriage, the dream's separation of the sexes, all these are unmistakable symptoms of the secret doubts hidden beneath Henry's consciousness. The Saint and the Prostitute. Henry's psychic condition was most impressively depicted in the following dream, which exposed his fear of primitive sensuality and his desire to escape into a kind of asceticism. In it, one can see the direction his development was taking. For this reason, the dream will be interpreted at greater length. I find myself on a narrow mountain road. On the left, going down, there is a deep abyss. On the right, a wall of rock. Along the road, there are several caves, shelters, cut out of the rock, as protection from the weather for lonely wanderers. In one of these caves, half hidden, a prostitute has taken refuge. Strangely, I see her from behind, from the rock side. She has a formless, spongy body. I look at her with curiosity and touch her buttocks. Perhaps, it suddenly seems to me, she is not a woman, but a kind of male prostitute. This same creature comes then to the fore as a saint with a short crimson coat thrown around his shoulders. He strides down the road and goes into another, much larger cave fitted with rough-hewn chairs and benches. With a haughty look, he drives out all those already present, also me. Then he and his followers move in and establish themselves. The personal association that Henry contributed to the prostitute was the Venus of Willendorf, a little carved figure from the Paleolithic age of a fleshy woman, probably a nature or fertility goddess. Then he added, "I first heard that touching the buttocks is a fertility rite when I was on a tour through the Wallis, a canton in French Switzerland, where I visited ancient Celtic graves and excavations. There I was told that there was once a smooth sloping surface of tile smeared with all kinds of substances. Infertile women had to slide down on their bare buttocks in order to cure their sterility." To the coat of the saint, Henry associated this. "My fiancée owns a jacket of similar shape, but it's white. On the evening before the dream, we were out dancing, and she was wearing this white jacket. Another girl, who was her friend, was with us. She had a crimson jacket that I liked better." If dreams are not wish fulfillments, as Freud taught, but rather, as Jung assumed, self-representations of the unconscious, then we must admit that Henry's psychic condition could hardly be better represented than in the description given in the Saint dream. Henry is a lonely wanderer on the narrow path, but perhaps thanks to analysis, he is already on his way down from inhospitable heights. To the left, on the side of the unconscious, his road is bordered by the terrifying depths of an abyss. On the right side, the side of consciousness, the way is blocked by the rigid rock wall of his conscious views. However, in the caves, which might represent, so to speak, unconscious areas in Henry's field of consciousness, there are places where refuge can be found when bad weather comes, in other words, when outside tensions become too threatening. The caves are the result of purposeful human work, cut into the rock. In a way, they resemble the gaps that occur in our consciousness when our power of concentration has reached its limits and is broken so that the stuff of fantasy can penetrate without restraint. At such times, something unexpected can reveal itself and allow a deep insight into the background of the psyche, a glimpse into the unconscious regions where our imagination has free play. Moreover, rock caves may be symbols of the womb of Mother Earth, appearing as mysterious caverns in which transformation and rebirth can come about. Thus, the dream seems to represent Henry's introverted withdrawal, when the world becomes too difficult for him, into a cave within his consciousness where he can succumb to subjective fantasies. This interpretation would also explain why he seeks the female figure, a replica of some of the inner feminine traits of his psyche. She is a formless, spongy, half-hidden prostitute, representing the repressed image in his unconscious of a woman whom Henry would never have approached in conscious life. She would always have been strictly taboo to him, in spite of the fact that, as the opposite of a too much venerated mother, the prostitute would have a secret fascination for him, as for every son with a mother complex. The idea of restricting a relationship with a woman to a purely animal-like sensuality, excluding all feelings, is often enticing to such a young man. In such a union, he can keep his feelings split off, and thus can remain true to his mother in an ultimate sense. Thus, in spite of everything, the taboo set by the mother against every other woman remains inflexibly effective in the psyche of the son. Henry, who seems to have withdrawn totally to the background of his fantasy cave, sees the prostitute only from behind. He dares not look her in the face. But from the back also means from her least human side, her buttocks, that is, the part of her body that will stimulate the sensual activity of the male. By touching the buttocks of the prostitute, Henry unconsciously carries out a kind of fertility rite, similar to the rites that are practiced in many primitive tribes. The laying on of hands and healing often go together. In the same way, touching with the hand can be either a defense or a curse. Immediately, the idea arises that the figure is not a woman after all, but a male prostitute. The figure thus becomes hermaphroditic, like many mythological figures, and like the priest figure of the first dream. Insecurity concerning his own sex can often